Now we come to the last one, level 4, results. This level measures the effectiveness of the training program. That is, what impact has the training achieved? These impacts can include items such as monetary, efficiency, morale of the team, the teamwork itself, etc. As we move from level 1 to level 4, the evaluation process becomes more difficult and time consuming. It's a long process. Some companies do it. And when they do it, they don't stop the work. The work goes on, but it's going on parallelly. So sometimes the report may come as late as 6 months later, even 1 year later. I've seen this. But they wanted to have it for two purposes. One is to calibrate whether they are in the right direction. Second is to keep an archive to know how the training is going. And as time progresses, a good HR department will try to reduce this time frame from 1 year to maybe 6 months, maybe 3 months. So their efficiency of this evaluation levels will go up also. I've seen this happen in one of the IT companies. However, the higher levels provide information that is of increasing significant value. This is a very important MIS, Management Information System, for the top management to know the impact of a training. In many organizations, Kirkpatrick model is given as a concise result at the top level to know how it is going. Okay, the only thing is it should be properly monitored. All the four levels should be properly documented and monitored, and then the concise information has to be given at the top level. Key performance indicators are volumes, number of units, values, percentages, time scales, return on investment, ROI, and other quantifiable aspects of the organization performance. For instance, the number of complaints that you received, has it reduced after you go for the training? Staff turnover. Staff turnover means people joining and leaving the company. Attrition, rapid leaving. Failures, wastages, non-compliance, quality ratings, achievement of standards, accreditations, growth, retention. The list is there. Longer list we can have. Now we take an overview on the Kirkpatrick evaluation model. There are four levels of Kirkpatrick evaluation model, of which the first three levels, reaction, learning and performance, are largely soft measurements. Soft means what? They are all theoretical, they are all understanding, they are all observable, they can be subjective. These are not measurable. Reaction informs you how relevant the training is to the work the learners perform. It measures how well the training requirements analysis processes worked. Learning informs you to the degree of relevance that the training package worked to transfer knowledge, skills and attitudes from the training material to the learners. It measures how well the designing and development of the processes worked. The third one, performance informs you the degree to which the learning could actually be applied to the learner's job. It measures how well the performance analysis process worked. But what really ultimately the company wants is the fourth one, results, that informs of the return the organization receives from the training. Decision makers prefer this hard result, although not necessarily in monetary terms. See, let's face it, organizations are spending investing a lot of money on training today. At the end of it, it's my role as a trainee, my role as an employee, my role as a manager who's going for a training program to see the larger picture and actually push myself to a new behavior which is producing results. And the moment you give results, you're in. Very simple. This is what is not happening in many places. That's why people are spending more money. I'm using the word spending now rather than investing. You go for one training, one single training well thought out is more sufficient than a number of trainings. I tell this to many company CEOs, many top level HR people, that why do you need to have such a big time to one particular training which will take care of many things. At the behavioral level, at the individual level, if a self-transformation training is given intensively, I think people will change and they'll become better managers and better officers. Okay. Note the difference in information and returns. That is, the first three levels give you information for improving, only information. The fourth level gives you the returns, the actual tangible things. A hard result is generally given in monetary terms, while soft results are more informational. For example, the organization vision is to provide learning opportunities or to increase retention, then a level 2 or level 3 evaluation could be used to provide a soft return. Have you understood the vision? So you go for a training. After that, have you understood? Yes. What is the vision? Vision is A, B, C, D, F, G, H. This is all you want in that particular scenario. But have you converted the vision into a result? Then this two, three are not enough. You have to go to the fourth one. Okay? This final measurement of the training program might be met with a more balanced approach or a balanced scorecard. There's another beautiful thing on balanced scorecard, Norton's balanced scorecard, a tool which we use for assessment, which looks at the impact of return or return from four perspectives. There are four boxes in that particular diagram: financial, customer, internal, as well as innovation and in learning. In financial, what are we doing? A measurement such as an ROI that shows a monetary return. Is it giving the ROI? We measure that. Customer orientation, improving an area where the customer, the organization differentiates itself from competitors. Are we giving better customer service? Are customers coming back to us again and again? Are they into repeat purchases? How we attract, retain, deepen relationship with the targeted customers? Second dimension. Third dimension is internal. Are we achieving excellence by improving such processes as supply chain management, production, support, quality, audit, etc.? The fourth one is, are we into innovation and learning? Ensuring that the learning support packages, learning package supports a climate for organization change, innovation and the growth of the individuals. Now we come to assessment of competency learning. The assessment, we need to assess it, right? The assessment of competency learning is best conducted at the individual level. The person to first and foremost asset, first and last I would say, is the individual and none other than the individual. Because if the individual is the person who is important, the atomic change has to take place. When the atomic change takes place, the whole mass will be perfectly okay. It is at the individual level that organizations are able to assess employees' reaction and embedded learning and transformation. Reactions are important because if employees react negatively to a training, they are less likely to transfer what they have learned into their work. Increased understanding in terms of new or improved knowledge, skills and abilities is the primary aim of a training event. The training department requires information about competency learning to determine the effectiveness of training delivery and approach. Data concerning the overall effectiveness of the training procedures, appropriateness of the media and instruction method, modification in instructional design and methods prove valuable. It's all the competency learning, what are the things we need. So these are the type of data we need to collect. Data collection could be through, now we are now going through a number of types, one shot case study. This method involves evaluating the trainee only once at the end of the program. The program is over, you evaluate him. It may not be possible to see through this method as to how much was learned from training and what was already known to the trainees. One short case study. Now we come to one group pre-test and post-test design. One group pre-test and post-test design. In this method, a test is conducted prior to the training to assess the existing level of knowledge, skills and attitudes of trainees. Another test is conducted after the training and the actual effectiveness of the training is found before and after. While this method helps in segregating what is already known to the trainees and what was learned during the training, the major drawback is that pre-test the trainees, which may alter post-test results. What do you mean by sensitizing? If I evaluate you before, then you know that your evaluation is done. If I evaluate you after the training, you may be manipulative. You may feel emotionally a little sensitive to realize that you haven't learned or you have learned more or some part of your previous is exposed. So this is emotionally little touchy for people, pre and post put together. Okay. Third one is one group time series. In this method, the trainees are tested for more than once before and after the training during different types of tests like paper, pencil, oral test, performance test, etc. It is resource intensive but helps in knowing how any learning matures or elapses over a period of time. So the group is tested at different points of time. Okay, this is a third method. The fourth one is randomized, non-equivalent control group design. Randomized, non-equivalent control group design. Very interesting. This is one of the tools which researchers also use for market research. Okay. It involves testing and comparing the scores of two groups before the training and again after the training. One group undergoes the training, which is called as the experimental group. The other group does not undergo the training, which is called as the control group. Employees are randomly assigned to the control and the experimental groups. So one group goes through a training, one doesn't go through a training. One is called as experimental, the other one is called as control group. What do we do now? The changes found in the experimental group are compared with the control group to arrive at effectiveness of the training. If there are no changes, a certain stimulus is given to both the groups, experimental group, which has undergone training, and the same stimulus is also given to the control group, which has undergone no training. When we see the results, if the results are matching, then the experimental group has not undergone the training or has not absorbed it properly. This method can give measures of improvements in experimental group in comparison to the control group. But again, the pre-training test can sensitize members, particularly those who are in the experimental group. Same as what we said earlier. Now we come to randomized equivalent control group design. Randomized equivalent control group design. That was non-equivalent, right? In this method, participants are selected from identical groups and allotted randomly to control and experiment groups. That means here, not only the outcomes of pre-training and post-training of the control and the experiment groups are compared, but also the validity is high because the members for both the groups are drawn from the identical lot. So I take people from one lot of people, to them I administer it. Okay, now whether they are experimental people or random people or control group, we do not know. And this actually gives us better results because this is like shooting in the dark. It's like randomly considering everybody to be equal. When I say control group means I am actually having a thinking that this is a different group. Here there is no thinking. I take people at random, make them into identical groups and I administer it. Okay. Post test, only control group design. Post test, after the test, only post test only control group design. This method helps in preventing the contamination, toxic effects of pre-test sensitivities. Here, both the control group and the experimental group are tested at the end of the training without any pre-test. While this method can also save the cost involved in pre-test, it will be difficult to determine how much of learning has occurred from the training and what was known to be the trainees before. Actually, I'm not interested in what the trainees are before the training. What I would be interested in what happens later on. The trainee may or may not be good before the training. If the training has done a good for this trainee, so for me, the pre-test is not important for me as an individual. So pre-test may not be all the time recommended in my own reading as a trainer. Okay. Then we talk about the popular questionnaires common in every walk of life. Questionnaires offer a structured tool that may provide both quantitative as well as qualitative information about employees' reaction to the training event. The questionnaire should focus on both training content and delivery. The training content section should target questions to ascertain whether the training materials provide useful information that will assist in performing work tasks and whether the employee is more knowledgeable about the subject matter following the training event. The training delivery section should determine whether the information was presented in the logical order, at the appropriate level of detail, and in an appropriate format. This information will assist the training department in determining how the training material should be revised and supplemented, and whether the training medium should be used is best suited to the training content. Some trigger points have been given here. You can keep on fanning out your thinking and put some more trigger points. Okay. Next, we come to knowledge review. Knowledge review offers an objective means of determining whether the training content has been learnt, the learning part, the cognitive part of it. Knowledge reviews refer to the general group of assessment tools in which employees read questions and respond in writing, like a theoretical test is given. The knowledge reviews may be administered by delivering the tool at the start and at the end of the training event. The tool should be developed as a short answer or a multiple choice instrument, using the same questions in each administration presented in a different order. Okay, jumble up the question, but it should be a type of questionnaire in which you are expecting short answers, which are trigger answers. The questions on the knowledge review should adequately address the learning objectives of the training. The results of each administration of the knowledge review can be compared to measure knowledge transfer during the training event. This information will be useful in assessing the training department to improve the course material. Next comes observation, very, very important part of any training. Observation is another evaluation method that provides information regarding employees' reaction to the training. You observe them. They observe things. Training department personnel should observe. Need not be training department, even the people from the user department, the supervisors and other people. Training department personnel should observe employee interaction, level of engagement with training instructors and responses to course content. This evaluation technique may be informal or highly structured. Informal observation can be used to provide general information about the training structure. Alternatively, highly structured observation focuses on monitoring particular points which I have noted there in the training event and commonly involves the utilization of a checklist of the points to be observed. Employee competency learning. Employees also require information about competency learning. However, the information provided to employees should be related to their ability to do their job better. These stakeholders will benefit by understanding their own strengths and weaknesses and how they have been addressed during the training process. Competency testing. Now, employee competency learning. Employee portfolio we talk about. Employee portfolio is an effective means of providing information to employees as well as your managers about the level of mastery of a particular knowledge, skills or abilities following a training event. What does it mean? Portfolio mean? Portfolio is a group of some things coming together. We have portfolio in stock market. You buy a number of shares, there's a portfolio. In a marketing scenario, we have a portfolio of products which is being sold. Okay? So in a portfolio, the skills you're having, what sort of skill sets you have? There is another word called skill sets. So what's a portfolio? The employee portfolio should be designed to be used for information purposes only. So this is the type of skill sets he has. This is what he can do. This is what he is doing. This is what is potential in him. The result of the portfolio are not intended to be linked to employee performance evaluation. To implement this concept, employees should be required to identify the learning objectives of the training and within a 60-day time, I would not say 60 days, it can be a period in which we calibrate and come and know for sure that it is done. Okay, here are 60 days given. So within a 60-day time frame, develop a work sample for review by the manager that demonstrates the application of their learning. Okay, so I know the portfolio of my employee who has gone for the training. I know this is where he or she stands in terms of the training. And then this needs to be reviewed on the job. I need to implement it in action so that I push him further. He already knows it, so a little bit further I need to push. It's like portfolio restructuring we do. Similarly, we need to restructure one's own portfolio of skills and competencies by pushing it ahead. The business unit manager should be required to ensure that within the time frame, employees are assigned activities that will allow them to produce a portfolio. After receiving the portfolio, the manager should review it and provide feedback to the employee on strengths and areas for improvement. Right? Second is a skill gap analysis. Another means of providing employee information about their skills development is to require business unit managers to conduct an assessment of each employee's level of knowledge, skills, abilities relative to the level required for successful performance of the position. This is a skill that you need to have. This is a gap that is there. So the skill gap is this. Can you develop it further? Can you close the gap? The skill gap analysis can be administered using a survey instrument. Okay. A skill gap occurs when an employee is rated with a lower level of skill than the position requires. The position requires a skill of say 8 units. He is rated as 6. He may be having the skills for 8 and even above. So that gap of minus 2 needs to be bridged. That can be done by various methods. This assessment should be used for information purposes only and should not be linked to the employee's evaluation process. Unfortunately, human beings being human beings, they start using this for employee evaluation also in reality. Employees can use the results of this assessment to track their skill development over time from the manager's perspective, right? So they can keep asking feedbacks, whether is it okay, now it was 6, is it 7, is it 8, tell me more about what I'm doing, getting a feedback. Now we discuss assessment of competency application part of it. The assessment of competency application, whether the competencies have been applied to improve performance and justify the investment, is best conducted at the organization level, where performance changes can be assessed and related to the training costs incurred. The key word in this bullet point is organization level. So whether the competency has been properly applied, has it really come into action after the training, is can be seen only by the overall picture and the development that is happening in the company. So the organization level people are the ones who can calibrate this much better, not on a micro level. If as a result of the training, employees are using appropriate behaviors on the job, this should have a positive impact on the performance. However, the level of performance improvement should justify the expenditure. For the business units, the training evaluation process can provide opportunities to determine how competencies are being applied to the job. The information will assist them in making sound business decisions and determining training priorities. Okay. Analysis of the organization performance measures. Organizational performance measure identifies the metrics, the measurables against which successful business unit operations will be evaluated. At the organization level, at the top level, we have what are called as measures. You know, there's one measure called talent output ratio. Okay. Or we have another measure called attitude to output ratio. These measures will enable performance tracking to identify trends and areas requiring further attention and intervention. This is a little bit of a strategic level, at a higher level. As a training evaluation method, the changes in the organization performance measures should be compared with the employee's skill gap analysis. As an evaluation method, the changes in the organization performance measures should be compared with the employee skills gap. What does it mean? The organization is going through certain performance measures based on what they have created. Now the skills of the employees are also getting addressed. The skills are either getting upgraded or some skills are there wherever they are stagnant. So when the organization is putting up its performance measures, which is the macro picture, they need to also connect it with the micro picture, whether the skills development or the skills gap are being filled up with the equal expectations that is happening at the strategic level. These two have to match. The company has got very high standards of performance, but the skills development is not happening down there. The whole thing goes for a toss. This comparison will identify the relationships between skills development and business performance. Okay. Analysis of organization performance measures. Information derived from this analysis would enable business unit managers to identify performance trends and areas for improvement and to make decisions about where additional training may be required. The use of organization performance measures to assess training allows business unit managers to be result oriented and business focused in their prioritization of training requirements. Organization performance measures are important and they should be given to the business unit heads and also to the HR people. That means they must know that my unit is doing this. This is impacting the performance measure of the top level in this manner, and they need to take corrective actions. The HR people in turn should know that what I do with the HR, the human resources, is impacting the business units and also the performance of the organization. So all the three have to be sensitive to each other's accountability, because it's a whole thing is a value chain, right? Return on investment, the very popular thing which people talk about in training. ROI is a measure of monetary benefits obtained by an organization over a specified period of time in return for a given investment in training program. ROI can be used both to justify a planned investment and to evaluate the extent to which the desired return was achieved. Unfortunately, people use ROI to retain a trainer or to check out a trainer, to continue with the training or to remove training, because ROI is not directly connected to the immediate results of a training. No, it goes over a period of time, and there are a number of factors that need to be understood, right? ROI is calculated by making estimates or obtaining measurements of the costs and the benefits associated with the training program. Using this information, the business units can effectively assign and apply resources to improve performance and ensure organization success. So I come to my perspective, author's perspective, finally. Training evaluation and measurement needs to be done in a very, very methodical, diligent manner. It's very methodical, very diligent. In my experience, I've noticed that the training evaluation either becomes too theoretical with theoretically oriented HR people, or it becomes too very practical without even the measurables being taken into account. Both of them to combine together, the theory and the practice and the results, all the three have to come together. And we have to take a pragmatic view. We can't say that this theoretical framework says this has not been done, I've got only so much marks, so the training has failed. The results are there. We can see the results happening. The behavior has changed. So once the results are happening, we know that the proof that the training is effective. At the same time, if the results are happening and the results are not in line with the company's measures, that also needs to be addressed. I am not pro behavior, I am not pro charts. Both are important. And last but not the least is the results that matter. Essentially, training evaluation and measurement is the outcome of calibrating the intangible with the tangible. Behavioral aspects have to be measured, have to be connected with the measurables, which is a bit of a circuitous way of connecting it. In my experience as a behavioral trainer, I can say one thing very clearly, because I've done training in pan industries at different levels in the company itself, junior, middle management, senior level, that behavioral training is something that is a major trigger that results in measurables. But if you catch hold of a behavioral trainer and you just put him down only on measurables, I think you're doing a great disservice to training itself. The trainer may or may not continue with you. But please ensure that the measurables are pragmatically put into the table. Critics, however, claim that behavior, attitudes, values, etc., which are complex human qualities, cannot be put into measurable metrics. I'm not a critic. What I am saying, there is a respect for both. But human behavior, to measure it, there is no single expert today, as far as I know. And behavior is not something highly scientific like the way a measurable is. When I say 1 meter, it's 1 meter, undisputed. But when I say good behavior, the word good itself is highly subjective. It has got millions of connotations. Good can be as in etiquettes. Good can be as in helpful. There'll be various connotations to each of them, right? So with this, my dear friends, I conclude this session. Thank you very much for listening. Good luck.